Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Everly lost it to Hartman. Hartman back to the point. Johnson snaps a shot. That one gets deflected wide. And Benning to Everly. Everly pushes it ahead. Here is McDavid. McDavid trying to split the defense. McDavid, what a play! What a goal!
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon, one of the lucky people who saw Bruce Springsteen in Toronto just the other night. I'm a writer for Sportsnet.ca and Sportsnet Magazine. Sitting to my left, NHL producer, senior producer for Sportsnet.ca. Guy who's just happy the NHL's new boss is back. It's Rory Boylan.
The air smells fresher. The food tastes better. Connor McDavid is back, baby.
Man, amazing. Amazing to see Connor McDavid come back. Amazing to see him score that goal. Amazing to see it on the night Sidney Crosby gets a hat trick. We are going to talk about all that stuff. We're going to drop in with Jonathan Willis. He's a contributor to Sportsnet.ca. He's going to talk more about McDavid and the Oilers. Little McDavid talk, good segue to talk not only about Crosby, but that number two overall pick from last year, Jack Eichel and the Sabres. We're going to talk with Dan Roberts. He's a finance writer with a focus on sports business for Yahoo about the Leafs rebranding. We're going to touch on Crosby's Penguins a bit, and we're going to talk about Dennis Weidman. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff, it sounds like. If you want to see us talk about stuff online, you can always follow us at, well, in this case, me, at Dixon on Sports. In Rory's case, at Rory Boylan. Download, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. But man, Rory, just jumping into it, you forgot about McDavid. Like, you forgot just how awesome it was that he was in the league this year, and boom, just like that, one crazy goal. Like you said, the air is fresher.
Yeah, he announced his return last night in a big way. The goal was amazing, but don't forget, he had two assists in the game, too.
That's
he had
right.
3 points.
3 points. Better than point-per-game pace right now, I think 15 and 14.
15 and 14, yep. And so now, naturally, the conversation of can he battle back into the Calder conversation? Can he battle the Oilers back into a playoff contender position?
I was thinking of this to that point. So he could play like 30, or sorry, he could play, I think, almost 50 games. He's got 30-something left, so it's close, but yeah. I know it's not a perfect comparison, but like Tim Thomas has won the Vezina playing 55 games.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's...
Yeah, and if he ends up scoring at a point-per-game pace and he's at 50 points thereabout, that's really good for a rookie skater, and if he's doing that, he's probably going to have the best points-per-game scoring pace of any rookie, so that would have to be taken into consideration as well. And so, if he goes above that, then I mean, I don't remember the last time a rookie had a better than a point per game. And maybe it was Crosby and Ovechkin in their rookie years.
Could be.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think I expected him to come back that strong last night. Yeah. I expected a few flashes here and there, you know, McDavid is back, but holy cow. I mean, what a way. It was against Columbus and it was Jack Johnson that he burned. So, you know, start low and build from there, but it was still impressive.
Well, speaking of building, we haven't really talked a lot about Jack Eichel on this podcast and the Sabres yet. And the Sabres having not a stellar season, but I guess about what you would expect. But you start looking at where Eichel's game has gone in the last little while. And by last little while, I mean, I think it's in his past 29 games, 24 points, almost a point per game playing.
Impressive.
On a bottom feeder. Kind of lost in the shuffle here this year, but hey, that's working out all right too.
Yeah, as flashy as McDavid is, Eichel is just as flashy. I mean, he is awesome with the puck. Great speed, great strength. And I remember ahead of the draft last summer, I was doing a radio show previewing the draft with Garrett Joyce, and we were talking about McDavid versus Eichel. And the point that he made was Eichel coming out of the NCAA, where you play against 20, 21, 22-year-olds, and they're bigger and they're stronger than junior players. that he might be better prepared to contribute and stay durable for the over the full season than McDavid would be. Maybe McDavid's injury was a bit of a fluke, but it's kind of he's right. You know,
sure.
It's been looking that way, and he's getting stronger as the year goes on. As you mentioned there, his points are picking up as the season goes on.
Yeah, after the first 20 games, he's really got it going.
Yeah, and as you look around at some of the other leading rookie scorers, we're not going to look at Panarin. His situation's a little different. He's a little older, but like Max Domi has slowed down a little bit. Anthony Duclair has slowed down a little bit. Dylan Larkin has kind of been picking it up lately, too. Like he's on a really nice scoring pace in his last 12 games as well. Him and Eichel both came from the NCAA, so you're kind of seeing that from both of them, while maybe the junior players aren't being able to keep up the pace over the full 82-game schedule.
Another guy on the Sabres I've written about, I don't think it's gone up on sportsnet.ca, but have a look, ladies and gentlemen, because it might be by the time you listen to this. Sam Reinhart, another dude kind of under the radar there. He's, you know, the thrust of what I wrote about was basically from the first training camp he would have had there and the sort of ceremonial 9 games he had last year. You know, I think there was probably some hand-wringing over, was this a guy who needed to go second overall? But
yeah,
you know what? He's starting to find his feet as well, and he's just coming off a he missed Buffalo's last 3 games for the break with an upper body injury, but really smart player starting to – he's had to switch out to the wing too, right? Because they got Eichel and O'Reilly, and those guys aren't going anywhere. So another guy to keep an eye on Buffalo is, you know, Buffalo was one of the more interesting teams coming into the year. It's, I don't think, a great surprise that the Sabres haven't done well, but still definitely some points of intrigue there.
Work in progress. And he's the Reinhart is the forgotten guy in his draft, just like Jonathan Drouin's the forgotten guy in his draft. He just hasn't had the opportunity. He hasn't pulled through yet. But, I mean, all the guys around Reinhart in that 2014 draft are Ekblad and Leon Draisaitl and Sam Bennett, and all these guys have been earning headlines for one reason or another in the past 2 years. And Reinhart went number 2 in that draft, and he's kind of lost not only in that draft but on his team because the team has so many.
Yeah, Vander Kane comes in a big trade. Yeah, you know,
Jürgensen is another great young player.
Ristolainen.
Work in progress.
I always think of Buffalo as 1 year ahead of the Leafs. Like, the Leafs are where Buffalo was last year, where they're scraping it down and trading away and haven't yet drafted the guys or the next guy who you're really excited about, i.e. whoever they might draft first, second, third overall this year. But, you know, if you're going to Sabres games this year, even if they're losing, at least you're watching guys and you're interested to see, like, how's Eichel coming around? How's Reinhart coming around? Like, you're into it as opposed to watching a bunch of dudes who are going to get traded at the trade deadline and never play for the team again. So they're in that, you know, sort of one step ahead. One guy who was once upon a time part of a quite a rebuild and something that, you know, bore fruit, but but hasn't since 2009. Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Man, Crosby, how fun would it be if, you know, McDavid comes in and he's he's like the new heavyweight contender. And just when we thought the old champ might be on the decline, now he's kind of like, oh, wait a minute, new coach here a couple months ago. Penguins all of a sudden scoring a bunch of goals.
Yeah. They're averaging 4 goals a game in their last number of games. Could the NHL have started the post All-Star break any better? You go in, you have
no
a
kidding.
John Scott celebration, which couldn't have worked out any better for them, and then you come back, and then that's a topic for another segment. And then they come back, and Connor McDavid scores 3 points, has an amazing goal. Sidney Crosby scores a hat trick. The Penguins are rolling; they're in a playoff spot now. All of a sudden, are they a contender again? Does it just take them this long to get the chemistry that they needed to figure that out, to get everybody healthy, and to just click? Because they really were struggling to score, just like the Anaheim Ducks were at the beginning of the season, and they're finding it, like Letang and Crosby.
Letang's crazy numbers in the past, like more than point per game in basically the past 30.
Yeah.
Playing with Ole Mata now, I think, which has helped.
So as far as Eastern Conference teams with Stanley Cup chances, where would you, I think we can agree that Washington would be number one. They'd be the favorite to come out of the East. Where would you have Pittsburgh right now?
Behind Tampa, probably still. Oh, that is tough. I mean, you can make
see, like, you always want the team that, it's always interesting to pick the team that is going into the playoffs on a high, on a nice streak, Is Pittsburgh maybe
peaking too early?
Peaking it too early, or is this just them finding what they are?
I want to say that I have them high, but I still really worry about that defense. I know Marc-Andre Fleury's had fine regular seasons, but let's be real. We're still probably not sold on him in a springtime scenario until we see it again. I mean, maybe too much is made of that, but I don't know. I still feel like that's a little question mark lingering in the back. So, I mean, I would love to see the Pens charge to the conference final again and be back and Crosby be in it. And as much as I could say I might have this, and this team ahead of them, well, we're talking about a nose ahead, right? I mean, it's not like, Washington way ahead. Everyone else, I still think, it's so close. I mean, and everyone has question marks. That's the fun part. I will say, looking at the standings on this day in February, at this moment, I think the teams that are in the Eastern Conference are the ones that are going to make it. New Jersey is on the outside looking in at this particular juncture. So you've got Florida, Tampa, Detroit, Washington, New York, Rangers, New York Islanders in the divisions, and then you got Boston, Pittsburgh. I don't see any of the Jersey, Carolina, Philadelphia, Montreal teams that are knocking on the door, Ottawa, or sort of knocking on the door. I don't think any of those teams are going to get in. I think what you see right now in the East is what you're going to see in April.
I tend to agree, and all the teams that are above New Jersey and Carolina in the standings right now also have games in hand on them. So, I mean, Pittsburgh is tied with New Jersey in points right now, but have two games in hand. Carolina is 3 points back, and again, they've played a couple more games, so you got to take that into consideration too. But I tend to agree, and I might even put Pittsburgh ahead of Tampa. I don't know if I'm sold on Tampa.
No,
I'm kind of over worrying about Marc-Andre Fleury in the playoffs. I don't know if I'm a little too ahead of myself.
Over is in you're done worrying about it.
Exactly.
You're too
that was always
it.
A reason why I would not pick Pittsburgh.
I
but
see.
He's kind of proven to me over the last couple of years that I've come around on him a lot. Yeah.
All right.
He was kind of underappreciated in the regular season last year. He had amazing.
He did.
Right?
Yeah,
that's not what we're talking playoffs, and that's a different story. But I'm coming around to Marc-Andre Fleury, and just because there's no other team in the East that's like,
true.
I could see them winning two rounds, no problem.
Yeah, it is crazy that
I feel bad for the team that has to go up against Washington, though, that unless you're the New York Rangers.
I guess that's fair to say the team that plays Washington, you couldn't see winning two rounds, but any of Florida, Tampa, Detroit, Rangers, Islanders, Boston, Pittsburgh, would you be shocked if any of those teams made the conference final?
Well, I would be shocked if Florida did.
That's just your inner fatalist talking.
Yeah, it might be.
Look at that low life.
But
he jinxed him. That's the Pop Van jinx.
But would you be surprised if the Detroit Red Wings
East? Well, Mrazek, think how much they, to some degree, did with flat goaltending, average goaltending. Now it's a whole new day. They have good goaltending.
Yeah, I mean, Mrazek has just been incredible for them. And who saw him unseating Jimmy Howard a year
ago?
And now he's in the running for a Vezina.
That series with Tampa, which made the Stanley Cup final, was closer than you think.
Yeah,
I mean, Detroit had them on the ropes, right? So, nothing would really surprise. One thing that would be if the Edmonton Oilers actually made the playoffs. We haven't seen that in a long time. We're going to throw that one at Jonathan Willis, along with a few other things related to the Oilers and McDavid. Maybe it's still bleak in terms of where the Oil will finish this season, but man, things looking much brighter with McDavid in the picture. Jonathan Willis, contributor to Sportsnet.ca, coming up next on Tape to Tape. So on the line now to talk a little Connor McSavior and Edmonton Oilers, it is Jonathan Willis, who writes for Sportsnet with a focus on analytics. Jonathan, how you doing?
Doing really well, thanks.
So he is back. Did you have a visceral reaction to the goal we saw last night?
Well, I don't know if jaw-dropping counts as a visceral reaction. boy, he sure put an exclamation point on that return. That was as good as could possibly have been expected.
You did a piece for Sportsnet.ca yesterday looking at McDavid and what we can expect from him the rest of the way. And I thought it was interesting you break down just how good he is, how efficient he is scoring at 5-on-5 and 5-on-4. And, man, you take something like that out of the Oilers lineup. I mean, you take that something like that out of any lineup, and that's such a huge hole. And now he's back. Of course, they're still without Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. They're still without Oscar Klefbom for now. Looking at McDavid the rest of the way, kind of give us a summary of the piece. What are you expecting from him the rest of the way? What kind of points do you think he'll put up? He started with 3 points last night, so he's off to a great start. But where do you see him ending up by the end of the season?
I think for me, the objective for McDavid is probably just the point per game mark. He may exceed that, but I think if you go beyond that, you're really getting into the realm of unreasonable expectations. It's easy to forget how young he is, how new to the league he is. I mean, that's his 14th career NHL game. So you do well to be a little bit cautious with what you expect from him. Having said that, like the piece laid out, he really is a significant contributor to the Oilers, and they've missed him in two big ways. The first is at even strength. The Oilers have been fortunate enough that they have Leon Draisaitl, who is actually the most efficient 5-on-5 scorer in the league this year. When I say efficient, I mean points per hour. Like on any given shift, nobody is more likely to pick up a point than Draisaitl. I mean, he's only a whisker ahead of Patrick Kane, but that's a pretty good place to be. Anyway, in the 13 games that McDavid had played, he scored at the same pace that Draisaitl has this year. So this is a guy who, you know, legitimately you could say is as big a threat to score on any shift as anybody in the league. So that's a big thing, and it's particularly big because Draisaitl's been playing with Taylor Hall, and that's given the Oilers one really good line, but they haven't had much in the way of secondary scoring. So what we saw last night and what we've seen throughout McDavid's time in Edmonton is he has the ability to make a whole line just come alive. He was a big help to Nail Yakupov. He's been a big help to Benoit Pouliot. And we saw last night what he was able to do with Jordan Eberle. So that's something that the Oilers have missed, and that's going to help them going forward. The other big area is the power play. The Oilers' power play has really struggled since McDavid went down. He's their best scorer. Their on-ice shot rates, all their underlying metrics jump up significantly when he's in the lineup. And, I mean, the power play was clicking last night. We saw that immediately. So those are two things that haven't really gone well for the Oilers, but with McDavid back, they should go well the rest of the way.
You mentioned a whole bunch of talented forwards we're all familiar with at this point. I feel like we can have at least a big picture Oilers conversation without talking about which forward you think might eventually be the guy who would, you know, seemingly inevitably be moved. Do you have a personal opinion on which of their higher end guys might at some point go out the door to try and get help, presumably on the blue line?
Well, the two names you hear a lot of, and I know Elliot Friedman has mentioned this, are Jordan Eberle and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And to me, Eberle is clearly the number one name on that list. The thing about bringing in McDavid is McDavid instantly becomes the heart of the rebuild, the guy that, you know, your window to win is predicated on. So Jordan Eberle, he's a 2008 draft pick. He's a little bit older than everybody else in the lineup. He's right at his peak years of production, what we know statistically are his peak years of production right now. And he's only under team control for, I believe, 3 more seasons. Now, that is a long period of time, but then you contrast him to somebody like Nugent Hopkins. Nugent Hopkins is 22 years old. He's under team control for, I believe, 5 more years. He's a lot closer in age to McDavid, and there's just there's a lot more value in having him there, particularly because the Oilers don't really have much in the way of center depth. So being able to have somebody maybe switch over to the wing and then revert to center like Nugent Hopkins could do would be a major asset. The only thing that I would say is that Eberle maybe doesn't have the same trade value as Nugent Hopkins or some of the other high-end forwards, and that's the only reason I could see them trading somebody other than him if they move one of those high-end guys.
So right now through 54 games, Artemi Panarin leads the rookie scoring race with 47 points. As we know, McDavid has 15 points in 14 games. Probably highly unlikely
that's a big
that
ask.
He passes Panarin, but You know, as far as points per game averages go, he could have a higher one than Panarin at the end of the season. Is there any chance you think that McDavid can come away with the Calder this year?
You know, I want to say no. I do want to say no, and I've been asked this question several times, and I've always kind of hemmed and hawed. But you think about it, I've talked to people about the Calder race, like informed hockey people, and one of the things that gets brought up a lot before McDavid got back, a lot of the focus was on the race between Panarin and somebody like Dylan Larkin in Detroit. And Panarin's a lot older, he's a lot more pro experience, and he's playing next to Patrick Kane. And I think those three factors are all things that impact voters. So if Connor McDavid comes back and he exceeds a point per game, like if he has something like 55 points in 50 games at the end of the year, I think it's going to be a very difficult choice for voters, and I could see a situation where he comes away with it.
What about if the Oilers get into the playoffs? You know, if they come back.
Speaking of crazy situations.
Yeah, I mean, here we are. We're without, they're without Nugent Hopkins, but he's going to be back in probably March, I guess. And all of a sudden, if he comes back, then you have this tremendous depth at center. Maybe one of the moves off to the wing. Maybe that makes a little bit more sense. But I would have to imagine that if Edmonton could find a way to get in, that McDavid would kind of have to be at the front of this Calder conversation. But do you see a chance that Edmonton, if they just hang around long enough for the next month and a half, that they get Nugent Hopkins back and that's enough to have put them in a race for a playoff spot and maybe slip in?
Well, I hate to rule it out entirely because we've seen teams go on insane runs, and we also know that the Pacific Division right now looks, the playoffs look a lot more realistic there than they do in any of the other divisions. But you have San Jose getting red hot, you have Anaheim getting red hot, and LA has been very good all year. So I think it's going to be very competitive, and I just don't see the Oilers being able to dig their way out of the hole that they're in right now. And the thing is, I mean, Nugent Hopkins is a big loss, but the thing that's really hurting them is Oscar Klefbom's absence. That's their number one defenseman. I kind of caught my breath last night. Andre Sequeira looked like he took a bit of an elbow to the head from Boone Jenner, and he was holding it, clutching his helmet afterwards. And I mean, if Sequeira goes down, that's their whole defense. They've got nothing on the right side. Last night they ran two rookies and two guys who had been on waivers this year. So that kind of tells you the state of the defense. I think it's just too weak for them to make up that much ground.
Well, regardless of where the Oilers finish, they're a hell of a lot more fun and interesting to watch now that McDavid is back. Mm-hmm. Jonathan, thanks for joining us and sharing some Oilers thoughts.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. We'll have to do it again, guys.
That is Jonathan Willis. He is a writer for Sportsnet.ca with a focus on analytics. When we come back on Tape to Tape, we're going to talk a little hockey finance, Leaf rebranding with Yahoo writer Dan Roberts. Coming up next on Tape to Tape.
Madman, drummers, bombers, and Indians in the summer with a teenage diplomat. In the dumps with the mumps as the adolescent pumps his way into his head. With a boulder on my shoulder.
It still all depends what we do with the sweater on. Then it's, and this is just one little piece, and we're trying to take care of all the details that we think are important to us. And I thought it was important to us that we get back to the story of why we became the Maple Leafs.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now, he's a finance writer for Yahoo who focuses on sports business. It's Dan Roberts. Dan, how you doing?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing all right. We wanted to get Dan's take on the big news in hockey jersey land. Obviously, the Leafs unveiling very recently a new logo, soon to be followed by the whole package. We'll see the entire jersey. We're going to hear a lot and have heard a lot about how this is about, you know, hearkening back to the team's glory days. But really, I don't think you have to be financial wizard to figure out there's some money to be made here. Just how much dough is on the line with this kind of rebranding, and how much money is out there to be made, especially for an incredibly popular team like the Leafs?
Sure. Well, first of all, guys, I'd say that, you know, the NHL has always had a struggle to sell the kind of merchandise that the other major leagues sell. But last year, around December, they had their best holiday season ever. Merchandise sales were up 14%. So I think the Maple Leafs are smart right now. They're realizing that they can benefit from a rebrand. Certainly, they want something exciting going on because they haven't had the success on the ice, you know, in quite a while. So they do this rebrand, and the benefit you get is kind of a dual bump. People are going to buy the new jerseys that have the new logo, but now in addition, you're going to see them try to liquidate the old stuff, and everyone will want to buy that because that becomes the throwback. So I think we've seen, you know, the LA Clippers did this recently and had some success, and the first thing always is people tease the new logo, but that fades right away, and people get used to it fast. So I think it's smart, and they're doing it at a time when the league has seen some bump in their merchandise sales, so that's great.
I find the timing of the unveil interesting. It's in the middle of the year. It's a quiet season for the Leafs, as quiet as it can be for a team in this market. They're not going to wear the logo for 6 months or more. I imagine that's just to create the buzz, get something positive going around this team, start merch sales early. What's your take on the timing of the logo unveil?
Well, yeah, it creates some buzz, and devoted fans are going to hop on the stuff right now and start buying it. But in addition, it's possible that this is tied to the overall buzz the league has gotten from the All-Star game. I mean, the new format went over pretty well, the 3-on-3. And in addition, with John Scott and the MVP thing, I've noticed just kind of a rise in attention on the league the last 2 weeks. And even from places that don't always talk about hockey, I think more eyes are on the NHL right now than usual, and so they're riding that tide. I think it's really smart. You know, I've seen some teasing online. We can talk about that, but people say, oh, you know, the veins at the bottom of the leaf look like a butt. But again, you know, people like to tease the beginning, and if you look on social media, there's bad and good. Give it like 2 months, and you won't see any of the bad anymore, and people adapt quickly. And I think it's smart, too, that the new logo harkens back to the original logo. That's the overall trend in sports apparel is throwbacks, you know, old-school look.
And can you know what? I want to jump in on that. Can you basically not go wrong if you're playing the nostalgia card when it comes to your apparel?
Well, you know, to an extent that's true, but at the same time, as the years go on and sort of political correctness rises, we've seen some teams in the NFL and the MLB have to distance themselves from their original logos. So it's fine, but you have to be a little careful. The Cleveland Indians, they can't do much with their original logo. The Wahoo, some people find it offensive. The Redskins are dealing with this. The Maple Leafs don't have that problem. But for the most part, people like seeing the old logo. Yeah, I mean, if you look at hats especially, and especially in the NBA, the throwback hats that show the team's first ever logo sell really well. And so, again, I think what you'll see now is people will like the new logo because it's a tribute, but they might also buy up more of the original throwback gear. So I think they'll see an overall bump, and I wouldn't be surprised if maybe down the line the valuation of the team changes. I'm sure you guys saw that in the most recent year, according to Forbes, the Canadiens were deemed more valuable than the Maple Leafs for the first time. Now, I always place a caution on those valuations. They're very ballparked. And the last 10 team sales have all sold for higher than the Forbes valuation. But it was interesting to see that switch of Montreal overtaking Toronto.
I'm guessing you will get this reference, but I want to ask you about the Malibu Stacy effect, i.e., again, speaking to what seems like an insatiable desire for fans to get in on different jerseys, old jerseys. We've probably all seen the Simpsons episode where a bunch of preteen girls storm into the toy store, see that there's a new Malibu Stacy doll and nothing's changed except she has a new hat. Like, you know, hey, we've added a line, a vein. Like, I know the Leafs to some degree have, you know, it's obviously a very different logo or a different logo than they have now, but is there essentially an insatiable appetite on the part of fans to jump in on even the slightest tweak when their teams do something?
You know, it's interesting. There is a little bit of that, but I'd say it varies. And it also connects to how big of a rebrand it is. I mean, this isn't as major as, say, I mentioned this earlier, but the Clippers, when they rolled out their new logo last season, I mean, it just looks completely different. It's modernized. It's a little wonkier looking. It's no surprise that their owner is Steve Ballmer, former Microsoft exec. The new Clippers logo looked very much like a tech startup's logo. In this case, the Leafs, I think smartly, aren't getting that far away from their logo before. I mean, I saw some stories come out before they unveiled the logo that said, you know, please don't ditch the Leaf. I think people were afraid that they would completely get rid of the Leaf. Well, they didn't do that. And so will people buy the new merchandise even though it doesn't look that different? I think some will. When we talk about merchandise sales, we in sports business reporting often talk about the companies involved. I think you guys probably know that Adidas got a new deal last year for the NHL. But I don't think the average fan notices which sports apparel company makes the jerseys. I don't think they much care or notice those things. But they'll buy the logo and the merchandise of the team they care about. So, you know, we'll see. I think that they're going to get a big boost in sales for sure. But we won't know until next December when holiday season comes. That's when all the sales really heat up, is at the holidays.
So the Leafs stayed very familiar, like we've talked about it going to the throwback look. But what about when a team tries something completely new? And I'm thinking back to the Buffalo Sabres when a number of years ago they switched over to the Buffalo Slug. They've since gone back to the throwback. But that Buffalo Slug was really, it wasn't received very well. And it's been kind of a running joke ever since. Can these redesigns go wrong? Can they go poorly?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think it happens more often with companies and with teams because, for the most part, if you're a diehard, lifelong fan of a team and they do a redesign you don't love, well, you're not going to stop rooting for the team. But you might not buy the new jersey. And again, like I said, a lot of people now prefer the throwback style. So as soon as you put out a new logo, the old thing, which is only a year old, becomes the hip and the cool. But yeah, that was a bad look for the Sabres. I mean, there was a headline I remember from Sporting News that just said it right in the headline. You know, the Sabres' new Buffalo Slug logo is horrible, or the new jerseys are horrible. And you know things aren't going well when sports outlets that try to be objective are putting you down right in the headline. But again, as I said before, I think it also gets overemphasized the extent to which fans notice or care. I mean, let's say the Maple Leafs had put out a bad logo. After a season, if they stuck with it, people would just accept it. Or if they went back, great, they went back. But, you know, I don't think that you lose old fans from a redesign, but you do stand to maybe gain new ones.
Last one for you, Dan. You mentioned early on that in the last couple of years, there's been an overall bump in NHL merch sales. Do you have a sense for what's driving that?
You know, it's hard to tell. Obviously, football has had a lot of controversy. I mean, the NFL is not slowing down by any means. But I notice over the last 3 years with their domestic violence crisis last season and now everything around head injuries and the movie Concussion that you see a lot more negative publicity around football. And I don't see as much of that with hockey. Again, I mentioned this earlier, but the John Scott storyline with the All-Star game was really compelling to me because there has always been discussion and debate over enforcers and over fights in hockey, and you didn't see that much of that this year. Instead, you just saw a celebration of how cool it was that this unlikely hero, A, made it into the game, and then B, was the All-Star. And I use that, the MVP. I use that just as an example of, I think there's a lot of positivity around hockey right now. I think that the league is growing. Obviously, merchandise sales are up. And so, you know, can it be the size of baseball, basketball, football? No, it isn't, and it won't be for a while. And people always make that comparison. I don't think it's a fair comparison. But I do think there's room for it to grow, and I think it seems like there's a lot of positive buzz. I'm not sure what's causing it. But, you know, winter, it's always a good time for hockey.
Well, just as we're interested in how teams sort of strategize on the ice, it's interesting to know what they're doing off the ice to position the brand, to position the organization. So, Dan, thanks very much for coming on and offering some insights.
My pleasure, guys.
That is Dan Roberts. He's a Yahoo finance writer with a focus on sports business. You can follow him on Twitter at ReadDanWrite. That, of course, is W-R-I-T-E at ReadDanWrite. Dan Roberts writes for Yahoo. Coming up next, we will put a bow on things here on Tape to Tape.
I took a pretty hard hit and down in the corner and Had some pretty good pain in my shoulder and my neck, and I was just trying to get off the ice, and I was kind of keeled over, and at the last second I looked up and I saw him, and you know, I couldn't avoid it. I think I went up to Donnie and I apologized to him on the ice. I didn't see him. I didn't know where to go.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. We always pay pretty close attention to suspensions, things of that nature, the disciplinary process on this pod, but really unique situation with Dennis Weidman. The word finally coming down, 20-game suspension. Mr. Former referee, what did you think of that?
Yeah, it's longer than I thought. I thought at least 10 games for sure, but I thought the league would go at a lower end than that. Because I don't think Weidman did it intentionally. Why would you hit a linesman from behind intentionally?
So take me through, put yourself in his brain and tell me what's in there in that
Weidman?
Moment then. Yeah.
I wish I could. I mean, he just got knocked in the corner. Originally, I thought he must have been woozy or something like that, and then that makes the Flames look awful because he didn't leave the bench for the rest of the game. So there's really no win here for him or the Flames. Somebody's going to come out looking bad. I thought that had to have been what it was. You can kind of see in the replay that he kind of steps off to the right side like he was trying to avoid the ref at the last second, but he didn't really do a great job of it because he still kind of gave him the nudge with his arms, with his hands. I really wish I knew what he was thinking. I don't believe him at the end of the game, he said he didn't see him. I don't believe that because his head seemed like it was up.
So what I have thought from like the first second I saw it was akin to someone lashing out and punching a wall, a Gatorade bottle. Like I think he was partially, you know, like you said, he got hit, he comes up, his head's up. He sees something in his way and in a flash of, I'm just really mad right now. He hits what's in his way, and I don't think he necessarily consciously connected the dots at that point that, oh, my God, this is a linesman. I'm going to take it out on the linesman. I think it was just like just that flash of anger, and there was something right there, and that's what bore the brunt of it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess ultimately what we can say is that can't happen pretty much regardless of the situation, you know? Like, I mean, you mentioned – we were talking earlier about that same night how Lucic punched a linesman in the, but I mean, apples and oranges, right? It's a scuffle.
Totally different thing.
Fists are flying, the linesman's in the line of fire. I mean,
one is a hazard of the job, which is getting the Lucic punch. And the other is something that should not happen.
Ever. You can't.
Whether it was because he was woozy or because he was frustrated, that's not an excuse. That doesn't excuse what happened here. You have to protect the referees as a
leader. Sure.
The intention, whether it was there, whether it wasn't there, all that second guessing, trying to figure out what was going through his mind, to me is irrelevant. This happened, and you have to deal with it, and you have to deal with it in a big way. I thought 10 to 12 games, probably 20 games. I fully support that. I mean, that's the NHL showing that they're completely in the referee's corner. Yeah.
And even at the expense in this case of a guy who had a good reputation, but doesn't matter though, right?
Yeah, it's unfortunate for him. Like, as I said, I don't think he intentionally drove a referee from behind into the boards. And the linesman was in hospital overnight, so that's got to be a factor in here too. I don't think he did any of it intentionally, and he's got a great track record. And, you know, the Flames are trying to hang on to into the playoff race here. So it's unfortunate that they have to be without him for a quarter of the year now. But it's the right call. It's the NHL had to come down hard on him. And I applaud them for how they did. I'm surprised.
That's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Get that through your head. So All-Star game done, official stretch run. Any big predictions for the final months of the NHL season?
Boy, a few weeks ago on this show, I predicted the Edmonton Oilers, in another bold prediction, were going to make the playoffs. I feel terrible about that right now.
Dummies like you.
You should feel a little less like a dummy after McDavid's comeback. But
And they'll get Nugent Hopkins back. You know, I don't feel great about it, but I'm going to stick with it because it was a bold prediction. But I want to make a new one. After the trade deadline, fully expect to see William Nylander up with the Leafs and a bunch of other guys. Like maybe we'll see Connor Brown. He's missed some time with injury. But I think Nylander is going to come up and make a real stand. I could see him for the rest of the way from March on scoring at a point per game pace. Woo! And really electrifying Leafs Nation.
And when everyone says it can't be done, Ducks fly together.
35 points in 28 games with the Marlies. 35 points in 28 games with the Marlies. He was leading the AHL in scoring before he went down with an injury. So, hey, you know, like...
This dovetails perfectly with mine. The Montreal Canadiens draft higher than the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Whoa.
At present, there is a 7-point gap. And when... God. I'm going to lay out the case for the Canadiens tank this weekend. So check it out, sportsnet.ca, Saturday, Sunday. It'll be up at some point. But, if anything, if there was any lingering doubt, they come back right after the All-Star game, get whacked. There's a 7-point gap right now. I could see that dwindling down to even a 2-3-point gap the way things are going. And all the Habs pain and frustration from December on evaporates when they get some good draft luck. And all of a sudden they're saying, hey, all right, now, next year we bounce back with, we've swooped in on, upended the Leafs plan to rebuild with some super fancy high-end pick, and away they go.
Yeah, Adam Gretz had a good tweet last night, Tuesday night, looking at teams that had at least 41 points through 26 games, as Montreal did this year, and how they've done. There were 19 before this year. All of them made the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
10 made the final, and 7 won the Stanley Cup.
That's crazy and amazing. So 10 of 19 made the final.
10
of
19 made the final.
More than half those teams made the Stanley Cup final.
Yes.
And the Canadiens could legitimately finish 24th, 25th. I mean, I crunched the numbers today in advance of writing a piece on this. They're playing 220 hockey. Anyway, I've ranted enough about that on the show before. But yes, there's my... Yeah, I don't know if those are...
Nobody
are those French
safe.
Booze? I don't know. But yes,
nobody is safe.
Stay tuned, folks. We don't know exactly how things are going to play out in the... Well, we're well into the second half, but down the stretch run here. But we will be here week after week to document it. That's all we have for you this time on Tape to Tape. As always, you can follow me at Dixon on Sports. You can follow Rory at Rory Boylan. Join us next time for more Glass Rattlin' Hockey Chatter on Tape to Tape.
This has been Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.